13 skulls. A journey into a world that is just beyond our comprehension. The world of the paranormal.
Welcome to the 13 Skulls Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be taking a look at the best photos of the shocking lunar UFO base on the moon from the Navy and NASA site. We're also going to take a look at a few pictures from John Lear. Scientists find active thermitic material in the World Trade Center dust, panic over a humanoid in Chihuahua, Mexico, a planet-hunting spacecraft that's beamed down its first images. We're also going to take a look at the Mars rover Spirit that has unexplained computer reboots. We're also going to take a look at what is supposedly a dead Bigfoot, a passenger who leapt 33,000 feet to his death, a shape-shifting UFO that was filmed over Brazil, an amazing Bigfoot mystery video from Russia, a Bigfoot spotted in the bush near Sydney in Australia, and an archaeologist who's hunting for Cleopatra's tomb. That and a lot more coming up in this 24th episode of the 13 Skulls Podcast. Welcome everybody to the 13 Skulls Podcast. I'm your host TJ, coming to you from Fort Worth, Texas. Let's go ahead and get the formality stuff buried in the dirt and out of the way. If you want to shoot me an email, there's two emails you can send them to, the13skulls@gmail.com or info@the13skulls.com. If you want to give me a call and leave me a voicemail, the phone numbers are 206-338-2205 or 817-986-0019. Now, this is the beginning of a new recording schedule for me, so hopefully we can actually get this out there every 2 weeks. Now, if you want, go ahead and give me a vote on Podcast Alley. I'd really appreciate that. Or if you want to let me know where you're listening to the show from, assign the Frapper map. I'd greatly appreciate that. So let's go ahead and get on with the show. All right, well, the first thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of nomoregames.net. Now, this is a site that is more or less kind of a conspiracy theory kind of site, and it has a petition on there that you can sign that I actually signed myself that is, it's a petition to release the 9/11 archive footage from the major networks to basically, you know, delve into a little bit more to see if what was supposed to have happened actually happened. There's a lot of links there, some other websites you might want to check out, especially if you're a conspiracy buff like me. I love that stuff. There's also a whole bunch of interviews on there. And, I mean, there's just, it's a lot of really good stuff. Anything from the economic crisis that we're going through right now, the mortgage meltdown, the recession in the U.S. economy, 9/11, there's a lot of really good 9/11 stuff there. Those one interview that I listened to from Morgan Reynolds. I'm not really sure exactly who he is. I know he's a doctor. I'm not sure exactly where he's a doctor from. I can't remember exactly what I heard in the interview. But anyway, you guys go need to check out some of these interviews. There's a whole bunch of them there from Mike Reynolds, Dr. Judy Wood, Professor Jesus Huerta de Soto. That probably sounded really bad. Professor Stanley Leibowitz, Dr. Bob Murphy. There's just a whole bunch of really good stuff there to listen to. A lot of really good interviews, like I said, especially if you're a conspiracy buff like myself. I'm not too sure if I really believe that the planes were actually a holographic thing, that, you know, the buildings really blew up with explosives. But the way I see it is you can't really count it out until the evidence is given to you to prove that you can count it out. Anyway, I know that, you know, there's a lot of people out there that love conspiracies. I know there's a lot of people that don't. I'll post a link up to it so you guys can go listen to all these interviews. They're really good. So, you know, go give them a listen. All right, well, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is a website that I found called thelivingmoon.com. And it's the Pegasus Research Consortium, and they're, I guess the Living Moon is an art, like a book or something from John Lear. Now, I know that a lot of you might not know who John Lear is. I know there's a lot of people out there who do. He's a very well-known, very prestigious pilot, I guess, if that's what you want to, you know, call it, prestigious. But anyway, it was an interesting a website. The Pegasus Research Consortium is a nonprofit educational think tank that shares ideas, patents, and information, collections of papers on alternate scientific research. They also have a page there. You know, you can go visit John Lear's page, Jack Arneson's files, Mike Singh's anomalies, but it's just an interesting website. I'll post it up there so you guys can go take a look at it. Now, the reason I'm going so quickly through these is I have a ton of stuff. I mean, I've got some of the web pages open here. I've probably got 15 web pages open right here, and that's not even probably half of it. So anyway, we're just going to be busting through these. You guys, I'll post a link up to everything that's in the show so you can go and take a look at it. That way you can get a better idea of what I'm talking about since I'm having to go so quickly through it. The next one that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of realufos.net, and it's a couple of videos. It's a fairly short article, but they're really interesting videos. And the article is "The Best Photos of the Shocking Lunar UFO Base on the Moon" from the Navy and NASA site. This is a must-watch video of some of the best and most clear photos taken from the Navy's own website of the base on the moon. It says here that NASA has clear evidence from its own website highlighting the unearthly base on the moon. You can check it out yourself if you don't believe if you don't believe what's on here, and it's from the Navy's own website. The second image shows two very tall tower structures that have been censored and smudged. The third image shows another that is absolutely massive alien structure that has been censored and smudged. The fourth image has been censored and smudged as well, but parts of the structure can still be seen poking out. Now, there's some images here that you can go and take a look at exactly what they're talking about, and you can go and watch the video. The videos are really good. Now, they are kind of grainy. You can kind of see where everything everything's been smudged out, but it's really, really good. It's interesting. It says here that the fifth image is one that shows three very tall structures towards the bottom of the image that have been censored and as well smudged. And you can go and take a look at these pictures. There's little click here buttons that you can actually go and take a look at those. Again, I'm sorry I'm busting through these so quick, but we have got so much stuff to take a look at, it's not even funny.
Airy Radio, opening the door to the unknown. Download episodes of Airy Radio directly from iTunes or visit their website at www.airyradio.com.
Greetings. You are about to enter the Noosphere. A roundtable stream of consciousness podcast on subjects related to and inspired by the paranormal, metaphysics, and science. Join us for our broadcasts or visit our website at www.noospherepodcast.com, where you can download past episodes and join in our discussion forums. We will break your mind.
Alright, well, this next thing that I want to take a look at is courtesy of AboveTopSecret.com. Now, I know a lot of you out there love Above Top Secret. I love Above Top Secret myself, but, you know, I'm not on there as much as I probably should be, but I love it. It says, at long last, the full-quality, huge file-size moon images John Lear had scanned into his computer by Bob Lazar many years ago are online here at Above Top Secret. From what John has said and what are seen in the files, this is a wide-angle original black and white NASA photograph split into five separate files when Bob Lazar scanned it into his computer. The technical data on it says four of them are labeled Copernicus 1 through 4 from the lunar orbiter 2H-162, spacecraft altitude 45.9 kilometers, camera tilt is 69 degrees 20 feet. I'm not really sure exactly how to read that. Anyway, it goes on to show all the latitude and longitude and all that stuff. It says the first batch are the huge, best quality, full-size images. If you have a dial-up connection, be prepared for a long download, and they are a long download. Now, these are pictures of the moon, and there are some strange things in the moon. Now, I was looking at a couple of the photos earlier. One that caught my eye was one of the first. Now, it's broken down into five images per batch. You have the huge quality, the medium size, and the small size. So pretty much they're all the same pictures, but they're very, very interesting pictures because there are some strange things in there. The one that I was looking at, you can kind of see what looks to be a star off in the distance, but it's right on the horizon, literally as if it's touching the horizon. I don't know if it was anything special about that. It does look like the images are kind of not matched up exactly the way they should be, but they're really interesting pictures. Again, I will post a link up to this for you guys to go take a look at. Sorry again for not going through them too quickly, but it's something that you're going to have to go see for yourself, Anyway, I can't speak today, but we'll move on to the next article. Like I said, I'll post a link up to it so you guys can go take a look at it. The next article that I wanted to look at is courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com. And it says, scientists find active thermitic material in World Trade Center dust. A team of nine scientists have unearthed startling data from the dust gathered in the days and weeks after the World Trade Center towers collapsed on 9/11. They discovered that scattered throughout the dust samples were red and gray chips of active thermitic material, or an unreacted pyrotechnic explosive. Thermite is used in steel welding, fireworks shows, and handheld grenades. It's the combination of a metal powder and a metal oxide, which produce a reaction known for extremely high temperatures focused in a small area for a short period of time. The active thermitic material discovered in the World Trade Center dust was a combination of elemental aluminum and iron oxide, and is a form of thermite known as nanostructured superthermite. Anyway, the article goes on for a good little ways here. It talks a little bit more about the authors of the paper that lost their jobs at the universities and the chemistry labs for their outspoken breakdown of what happened at the World Trade Center on 9/11. I know there's quite a few things so far in the show today. about 9/11, but it is quite the spot and the incident, the occurrence, what happened, however you want to describe it. It is something that has a lot of conspiracy to it, a lot of things that people can't quite explain, and a lot of stuff that, you know, like this thermitic material, where could it have come from? You know, if there were no explosives, like people are saying, and all it was a plane crashing into the building, you know, what's up with that? Where would you have gotten this stuff from? But anyway, there's, like I said, there's more to it that you guys can go take a look at. So, you know, I'll move on to the next article. The next one I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of space.com. And it's the search for the solar system's lost planet. Now, this is kind of a little bit of a long article. It'll take me a little while to go through it. So I'm just going to narrow it down. The solar system might have once had another planet named Theia. T-H-E-I-A. So if I'm mispronouncing that, you know, let me know, which may have helped create our own planet's moon. Now, two spacecraft are heading out to search for the leftovers from this rumored sibling, which would have been destroyed when the solar system was still young. Excuse me. It's a hypothetical world. We've never actually seen it, but some researchers believe it existed 4.5 billion years ago and that it collided with Earth to form the moon, said Mike Kaiser, a NASA scientist at the Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland. Theia, however you want to say it, is thought to have been about Mars-sized. If the planet crashed into Earth long ago, debris from the collision could have clumped together to form the moon. This scenario was first conceived by Princeton scientist Edward Bolbruno and Richard Gott. Many researchers now figure that indeed some large object did crash into the Earth, and the resulting debris coalesced to form the moon. It's unclear that if the colliding object was a planet, asteroid, or comet. In any case, the debris that would have spun out of the two slamming bodies would have mixed together and could explain some aspects of the moon's geology, such as the size of the moon's core and the density and composition of moon rocks. Scientists are hoping NASA's twin stereo probes, launched in 2006, will be able to discover leftover traces of Theia that may finally help to close the case on the birth of our own moon. Anyway, I thought it was really interesting that there possibly could have been another planet, an actual planet that you know, crashed into Earth. I mean, I've heard the theory before that, you know, something crashed into Earth to form the moon, that the debris, you know, like I said, coalesced, to form the moon. But anyway, I just thought it was really interesting that they actually sent out probes to check this all out. There's a little bit more to the article there. There's some links here. 24 Hours of Chaos, The Day the Moon Was Made, Multimedia, How Lagrange Points Work, and the Top 10 Coolest Moon Facts. They're down at the bottom of the article. You can go and take a look at them there. Like I said, I'll post a link up to it so you guys can, you know, go take a look at it. The next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of swissinfo.ch. And it was a really weird article that I heard in another show that I had to go find because I thought it was really interesting. Doctors confirm a woman's imaginary third arm. A 64-year-old woman was reported to doctors at Geneva University Hospital with the presence of a pale, milky white, and translucent third arm. After examining the case, the woman's neurologist, Asaid Kateb, of the hospital's experimental neurophysiology laboratory, called the rare phenomenon credible. The arm appeared to the woman a few days after suffering a stroke. But this case of what is known as supernumerary phantom limb, or SPL, is a genuine head-scratcher. The upshot is that the woman can use the apparitional extremity to relieve very real itches on the cheek. It cannot penetrate solid objects. She does not always perceive the arm, but retrieves it when needed, doctor said. It's nevertheless the first case known to doctors of a person being able to feel, see, and deliberately move a limb that doesn't exist. The findings are published in the Annals of Neurology. Anyway, I thought it was really weird that you could have this. Now, how really would you confirm it? That's what I'm wondering. It says that doctors confirmed the woman, you know, had this imaginary, you know, third arm. Now, there's more to the article here. It says pinpointing. Kateb and his colleagues examined the patient's brain using functional magnetic resonance imaging, or fMRI, a tool that allows doctors to see whether the brain is truly stimulated and to pinpoint where. In this case, the investigations revealed that the woman's actually actually experienced what she described. Researchers instructed the woman to move her right hand. As expected, the visual processing areas in the left side of her brain became mobilized. The same effects were observed to a lesser extent when the woman simply imagined moving her right hand. Imaginary movements of the woman's paralyzed left hand prompted the same activity in the brain, but on the right side. When the doctors asked her to move her phantom arm, her brain reacted as though the arm really existed and could be moved. In addition, the patient's visual cortex was also activated, indicating that she really saw the imaginary limb. And when she was instructed to scratch her cheek, regions of the brain relating to the touch were activated. It goes on a little bit further, saying, Kateb said the exact cause of the imaginary arm remains a mystery. Supernumerary limbs are rare. There are only 9 known cases of a patient both feeling and seeing an arm. The phantom limbs are more commonly associated with people who have had an amputation. Between 50 and 80% of people who have had body parts removed suffer from it. In most cases, it's painful, according to a 1984 article published in a scientific journal called the Clinical Journal of Pain. Ultimately, however, these conditions might offer a unique way to understand how the brain constructs a normal experience of bodily awareness in the self, they concluded. And I don't know. I mean, it's just a really strange thing that you could actually see, perceive, and feel something that isn't there. Does that just mean that the brain is a little bit more complex than what we thought and is capable of actually manifesting something to itself that really isn't there? Anyway, like I said, I found it really interesting. I will go ahead and move on to the next article, which is from the dailygalaxy.com. It says, scientists discovered drugs that can block memories and radically alter human personalities. Now, most of this article is more of an opinion from the person who wrote the article, but I just thought it was really neat. Now, the one part that I am going to read here says, scientists have discovered drugs which can block out memories and have the potential to radically alter human personalities. Chemicals like propranolol and Zip have already been shown to remix recollections. But if memories make the man, what happens when you mess with those? Anyway, I thought it was really neat. There's not a whole lot more. I mean, like I said, it's more of an opinion from the person who, you know, is writing the article. It says, neuroscience lesson number one is the human brain is terrifyingly complex. Any alteration could cause serious side effects, with the additional problem that such symptoms are difficult to diagnose. If your kidney stops working, we have all kinds of ways to measuring it, how you eventually fall over for one thing. I just thought it was really interesting that scientists are actually coming up with a drug that can block memories or radically alter them. Now, I do see some pros to that. If you have something that was extremely traumatic to you that happened to you in your childhood and it messes with you to this day, then of course you're going to want to have that memory blocked, so you don't have to think about it anymore. So there is good potential for that, but the potential to use it in a very negative way is amazing to me. I mean, there is potentially, a very negative thing that you could do with that. I mean, you could seriously, if that got into the wrong hands, man, you could really mess with some people seriously. But anyway, if anybody's got any opinions on, you know, the pros and cons of blocking or, you know, blocking memories or radically altering a human personality, you know, let me know. I mean, I think that I guess I shouldn't really say this, but there are some people I've met that I'd like to radically alter their personality because their personality was just horrible. But anyway, I will keep my personal opinion out of this. Let me know what you think about blocking memories and radically altering human personalities. Now, this next article that I wanted to take a look at is a pretty daggone long article, but I want you guys to go read it. I've read it already, but it's an interesting humanoid that's been seen in Chihuahua, Mexico. That from Chihuahua, the man bat, who seems to have popped out of some fiction movie, is a real creature that caused a young student from the local university, a resident of La Junta, to panic. It is being witnessed by several locals who have described it as a winged humanoid with a fur-covered face and high height of about 2 meters. This all coincides, by the way, with the killing of sheep by decapitation in several ranches. The young man, a non-smoker, non-drinker, and non-drug user, is called question mark. They don't even want to call him anything, and does not want his name in print. And he has not yet recovered from the experience, but that evening, on Friday, March 6th, as he left the Universidad Regional del Norte and headed home to La Junta. However, when he reached Puente Sin Nombre, sorry, my Spanish is horrible. He was forced to hit the brakes and make an emergency stop. There was a shadowy bulk on the asphalt, looking like a hunched over man, perhaps covered by a blanket. Upon approaching, the still unknown figure rose to its full height, leaped forward twice, unfurled enormous bat-like wings that probably covered the width of the lane, and took to the air. The young man in question, a serious and outstanding student in his coursework, didn't think twice. He floored the accelerator of his vehicle, burning rubber as he tried to flee from the unknown creature. A desperate 15-minute chase ensued. The strange creature flew with the power of its rear wings, which were smaller, keeping abreast of the vehicle and peering through the passenger window. The fear became more intense, and the youngster only thought to call home via his cell phone. His mother answered the phone, and she asked why she could hear the noise of a vehicle trying to reach full speed. His voice being broken by tears, the witness tried to describe that a man or perhaps a winged animal was chasing him. His first notion was that it was an apparition, a shape assumed by death, and it prompted him to scream in despair, "I'm going to die, I'm going to die." He now says that it could have been a hallucination of sorts, but upon reflecting on the entity that chased him for over 15 minutes, he feels shivers again, and he says, no, it was no illusion. This is the closest brush he has had with fear. Anyway, it's an interesting article. Like I said, it goes on for quite a while. I just thought it was interesting that this kid was chased for over 15 minutes by what seemed to be the Mothman, or what seemed to be some kind of of a winged creature. I mean, was it a chupacabra? Was it what? I don't know. I mean, it had wings, so it obviously had four wings because it said it had a rear set of wings. But anyway, you guys go read the rest of the article. It was really neat to hear of the humanoid bat creature in Mexico. Now, this next article, again, is courtesy of space.com, and it's the planet-hunting spacecraft beams home its first images. The planet-seeking Kepler spacecraft has beamed home its first images of the patch of sky where NASA hopes to find the Earth-like planets circling distant alien stars. Some 14 million stars are estimated to lurk within the first views from Kepler, which NASA released on Thursday. The images reveal a swath of stars between the constellations Cygnus and Lyra that fill an expansive area of our Milky Way galaxy, which, when seen from Earth, is about the size of a human hand held up against the sky at arm's length. The first images from Kepler released by NASA include views of an entire target zone, as well as close-up shots that zoom in only on a fraction of the full star field. One view includes a cluster of stars some 13,000 light-years from Earth, known as NGC 6791, while another image includes a star called Tress 2, which is already known to harbor a massive Jupiter-like planet close by. Kepler's first glimpse of the sky is awe-inspiring, said Leah LaPiana, NASA's Kepler's program and executive at NASA's headquarters in Washington, D.C. To be able to see the millions of stars in a single snapshot is simply breathtaking. NASA launched the $600 million Kepler space program to sift through those millions of targets for 100,000 pre-selected candidate stars that may have Earth-sized planets around them. Now, it's really interesting to see this. Now, one of the pictures is listed there, and you can see it. It really is quite an awe-inspiring picture, really. It's not very big, and you can't really expand it, but it is a pretty cool picture. Anyway, I just love the space stuff. I figured I'd include that in there for you guys, because it'll be interesting to know that if maybe one day, just one day, sometime in the future, we can find just one planet that somewhat resembles Earth. All right, well, the next article I wanted to take a look at, I thought was I don't know, it was kind of sad, but I figured I'd read it anyway. It's a DaytonDailyNews.com article, and it's the Stanley Mills owner, who claimed false tales about the historic property being haunted, turned her life into a nightmare, has received a judgment for more than $125,000 against a Columbus website operator. Melissa Dewar also granted her request for a court order against Columbus resident Andrew Henderson, his use of the Stanley tale on the ForgottenOhio.com website or any other site. Basically, the guy said that the place was haunted. He made false claims, basically. And I was thinking about that. And, you know, it's not really all that uncommon for people to make false claims just to draw some kind of attention to themselves or to whatever it is that they're doing. But I don't know, part of me just made me think that it was quite sad. I'm glad to see the person have to pay for it, you know, just because you shouldn't be lying about stuff like that. That's what makes the rest of everybody else who actually is legitimate seem incredible. And it makes it seem as if you're everybody else is lying. So basically the whole one bad apple ruins the whole tree thing, you know, is kind of in effect for most people whenever it comes to this, because, you know, just one person can make the difference between whether or not a whole group of people actually believe or don't believe. I don't know. Anyway, I just thought that was interesting. I'll post a link up there. There's quite a bit more to the article there if you guys wanted to go read it. But if anybody's got an opinion on whether or not it's a good thing to even just hype that something is, you know, could possibly be haunted. I don't know. Anyway, I'll move on to the next article. The next one that I want to take a look at is courtesy of fizorg.com. And it's a pretty short article. It's the Mars rover Spirit has unexplained computer reboots. Now, the Mars rover Spirit, there's a couple of rovers up there. One of them's name is Spirit, and it's on Mars, and it's been running around for quite some time now. It says that NASA's aging Mars rover Spirit has rebooted its computer at least twice for unknown reasons. Rover project manager John Collis at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena said on Monday that the rover is in a stable operation state called auto mode and can remain that way for some time while the problem is diagnosed. The reboots occurred during the past weekend. Collis says Spirit's batteries are charged, its solar arrays are producing energy, and its temperatures are within allowable ranges. The rover team is investigating whether the problem could be related to recent updates of the rover's onboard software. How shocking that there's software that could cause something to have to reboot. Anyway, happens to me all the time. You'd figure they would have better technology with as much money as they put into this stuff, but anyway, Spirit and its twin Opportunity have been exploring the cold and dusty red planet since 2004. Sometimes it makes me just wonder if maybe, there's some major company out there that, you know, starts with an M and ends in Microsoft that might actually have, you know, written the software for them. Because, like I said, my computer, after some updates just completely shuts down. So, anyway, I just thought that was interesting that even if they had problems, would they be able to solve them, you know, to a degree? I mean, this thing's been on there for 4 years. Eventually, they're going to have a problem where they're not going to be able to fix it. But anyway, I'll shut up now and move on to the next article. The next one is from telegraph.co.uk, and it's the world's most accurate clock has been unveiled. Perfect timekeeping has taken a step closer to reality after scientists developed a clock that loses just 1 second every 300 million years. The researchers claim that the new atomic clock is more than twice as accurate as timepieces currently used to regulate international time zones and satellite systems. Like its predecessors, the Strontium atomic clock at the University of Colorado harnesses the natural and extremely consistent vibrations of atoms to keep track of time. But it makes the pendulum effect of atoms even more consistent by holding them in a laser beam and freezing them at almost minus 273 degrees, the temperature at which all matter stops resonating. Even though the increase in accuracy represents only a small fraction of a second, it has great potential in areas to do with determination of great distances, for example, measuring the distance to distant galaxies in space. Now the team wants to go a step further. We dream of getting an atomic clock with perfect precision, said Professor Thompson. Professor Thompson also said an atom consists of a nucleus and some electrons that spin in a clearly defined orbits around the nucleus. And it's Professor Jan Thompson, a nuclear physicist at the University of Copenhagen, who has worked with the new experiments together with the researchers at the University of Colorado. By using the focused laser light, one can make the electron swing back and forth in a clearly defined way between these orbits, and it is that which forms the pendulum in the atomic clock. Well, you know, I just thought it was really interesting. I mean, 1 second every 300 million years to lose, yeah, it's not really too awful bad. All right, well, the next article I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of belfasttelegraph.co.uk, and it's a 3,000-year-old bracelet found in Tyrone Field. A County Tyrone family could be in line for a reward after finding a rare Bronze Age gold bracelet on their land. Farmer Gary Spruill accidentally unearthed the precious artifact while plowing over a field at Castle Gore near Castledurg last April. The intricate item has been dated back to almost 1,000 years before the birth of Christ. An inquest was held yesterday at Belfast in which the item, which would have belonged to an important warrior or priest, was officially classified as treasure. Under the law, a treasure trove inquest must be held by the coroner to determine significance of such finds. The finder of the item, as well as the landowner, are often then entitled to a discretionary reward. I just thought it was really neat that they found this while just plowing through a field. I mean, they found a 3,000-year-old gold bracelet while just plowing a field. It just makes me wonder, really, like, if a gold bracelet like that is just out there in a field somewhere, what else is just below the surface? All right, well, this next article I wanted to take a look at, and actually the next three, is courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com, and the title is This a Dead Bigfoot? And that's what caught my attention. And there's really nothing to this article. It's from Lauren Coleman at cryptomundo.com that this article came from. It says, what is shown in this image? Where was it taken? By whom? What? Craig Woolheater first posted this on Cryptomundo on November 21st, 2006. If anyone knows anything about this, you need to contact Lauren Coleman at Cryptomundo.com so you can answer it. Now, it looks like a really old photo. I mean, really old. It probably looks like, I don't even know, late 1800s maybe. Really old school picture. And basically what you're going to be seeing is a old pioneer looking guy holding his rifle in his left hand, the butt of it on the ground, holding the barrel in his right hand. He's got a hat, a beard, you know, overalls, and he's just standing there with his hand on his hip. And he's looking straight at the camera, but directly to what is his left, or if you're looking at the picture, to be directly to the right, you see this huge Bigfoot looking creature just hanging upside down by its feet. You can clearly see that it is human shaped. It has two long legs, a torso, a head, and two arms. And it's not what you would consider to be a bear, because bears generally, their legs are somewhat roughly the same length. This thing definitely is like a human. Its legs are longer than its arms. It's really interesting. I want you guys to go take a look at it just to see the picture. It's interesting. I'll post a link up to it. But if anybody else knows anything about this picture, or if you know who Craig Woolheater is, you know, contact Lauren Coleman at cryptomundo.com. Now, this next article I wanted to take a look at just made me wonder. It's courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com again, and it's a plane passenger that leaps 33,000 feet to his death. And I was thinking to myself whenever I saw this, man, you gotta be seriously wanting to commit suicide if you really want to jump out of a plane, because you got plenty of time to rethink your decision once you start falling. Anyway, it says, a man traveling on a small passenger plane wrenched open the door of the aircraft while it was flying at 33,000 feet over northern Canada and leapt to his death, at least according to police. The cabin of the aircraft suddenly depressurized and the pilot was forced to make an emergency landing with the door of the plane still ajar. The 20-year-old passenger had become unruly during the flight, and the aircraft's pilots had struggled with him but were unable to prevent him from opening the door and jumping out. The Adlair Aviation plane, with two pilots and two passengers, was flying from Yellowknife to Cambridge Bay when the man jumped on Wednesday night. The plane came in with the door open. Somehow they were able to control the aircraft to land, and the three other people were okay. It was just really interesting. They didn't say anything about whether or not they found the guy's body. They did say that the pilot was just too distressed to talk to the reporters. I mean, 33,000 feet, dude, you got a long way down before you hit the ground. All right, well, the next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com, and it's a shape-shifting UFO in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. The video was supposedly taken in Rio de Janeiro in September of 2008. This is the first time the video has been seen depicts a shape-shifting UFO that remains somewhat stationary. It says, not sure what to make of this one, though CGI is not out of the question. And the guy who wrote the article, I guess, wants some opinions, but it's an interesting video because you can kind of see it shape-shifting. But it doesn't look like shape shifts too much. But anyway, you guys go take a look at it. It was a neat video. Granted, true, like the guy says, CGI is not out of the question. Some kind of photoshopping, is not out of the question. It's just an interesting video. So you guys go take a look at it and let me know what you think.
By Phil Rossi, featuring all new Crescent vignettes as well as other stories. Visit www.crescentstation.net for details. In 2007, he scared you. In 2008, Phil Rossi will drive you insane.
Oh, no.
Welcome back, everybody. The next article that I wanted to go ahead and take a look at is courtesy of allnewsweb.com, and it's a Bigfoot video from Russia. And the article says, a reader from Russia, Mr. Alex Morozov, sent us this video of an alleged Bigfoot or Yeti. It is making news in Russia in the moment and doing the rounds of all the paranormal and cryptozoology websites. And this is, the eyewitness claims to have shot the video at 18:30 or 6:30 on April 5th of this year during a ride on ATVs. The locals are aware of the beast and call it the Beast of Gam Hill. The beast was photographed in 1980 once, and this is the second time the eyewitness has seen it. In a local myth, the beast or yeti is regarded as being a shy and non-aggressive animal. Locals have known about it for hundreds of years or so and say it is 7 foot and 350 pounds. The video was shot with a cheap digital viewpoint 5 camera. The witnesses says they use it when traveling or roughing it. The video is down at the bottom of the article. You can watch it there. Basically, what you see is the video camera is pointed upstream, so you're looking at the water coming towards you as the stream is flowing down. It's on the left side of the river or creek, whatever you want to call it. It's about, 20 foot wide or so, and you see a guy in a red four-wheeler riding up the creek. Or up the river, whatever you want to call it. And in the far distance, you can see this animal that looks like a Bigfoot. It's big, tall, hairy, brown, walking through the woods, but at the edge of the river. And the guy stops on the four-wheel and is like pointing at it and, freaking out about it. It doesn't last all that long. It's only about 26 seconds, so it's not that much footage to watch, but it was interesting to say the least. So I wanted to post it up there for you guys. So again, I will post a link up to it. You guys go take a look at it and, make a judgment for yourself.
Thank you.
All right, well, the next thing that I want to take a look at is courtesy of mossnews.com. Again, another Russian Bigfoot, this time in Siberia. More evidence of the abominable snowman, or Yeti, or Bigfoot, has been uncovered in Russia's Kemerovo region in southwestern Siberia, at least according to the Moscow newspaper. Vladimir Makut, a local administrator in the Tashtagal district in the Kemerovo region, noted in an interview with the newspaper that sightings of the unusual large creature in the area date back far into Soviet times when the area contained several prison colonies. It doesn't really say, it just goes on to say dozens of sightings. The expedition that Makut, I'm not sure how you say his last name, he organized an expedition to the cave and found, you know, tracks himself. Now, there's a picture of the tracks there. The tracks look to be, I don't know if you guys know what an ice pick is, but there's a picture of an ice pick, you know, people who, you know, mountain climb, especially in ice, they would use, like on Mount Everest, they use big ice pick to help them climb themselves way up there. But anyway, you see a foot there, and it looks like the foot of maybe the left foot. It looks like it has a really big toe. It's a really wide foot. I'd say it's almost half as wide as it is long. For some reason, cannot talk right now. But anyway, I just posted it up there. I thought it was really neat that there's, you know, several Bigfoot sightings in Russia. Now, Russia's a really big country, so, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if there's a plenty of, areas out there that are so remote and so vast that you really wouldn't know of all the animals that live there, maybe. So, anyway, I just posted it up there. I thought it was interesting. You guys go take a look at it. Let me know what you think. Now, the next article I wanted to take a look at, it just kind of struck my eye whenever I saw it, because I'm reading one of his books, and it's courtesy of news.bbc.co.uk, and it's Hawking to make a full recovery. Scientist Stephen Hawking is expected to make a full recovery after being taken to the hospital with chest problems. The 67-year-old professor, who has motor neuron disease, is comfortable at Addenbrooke's Hospital in Cambridge. He was described as very ill when he was admitted to the hospital on Monday with a suspected respiratory infection. The author of A Brief History of Time, which is actually, oddly enough, the book that I am reading. A Cambridge University, or the author of A Brief History of Time, has been unwell for weeks. A Cambridge University spokesman said Professor Hawking is being kept in the observation at Addenbrooke's Hospital. He is comfortable and his family is looking forward to him making a full recovery. The physicist, who uses a wheelchair and speaks using a voice synthesizer, has worked at Cambridge University for more than 30 years. And I was just thinking to myself, you know, it's going to be a sad day whenever that man dies. It really is, because he's one of the most intelligent people on the planet. You know, I mean, some people would say that he might not be that intelligent, that he's more of just a theorist, but still, I think he's a pretty intelligent guy. I like what he's had to say. He's an interesting character. You know, it's sad to see someone have to go through something like that. It really is. It's quite sad to see somebody have to go through something such as the motor neuron disease, which is just sad to see that. But anyway, I just thought it was interesting that, that he was in the hospital, but hopefully, like they said, he'll make a full recovery. All right, now the next article is courtesy of uk.news.yahoo.com. A lot of dots there. It says, more miles found for the Great Wall of China. And I thought this was really interesting that they found what they found. It says, the ancient Great Wall of China is even longer than first thought, with a new study showing more has been unearthed. The extra 180 miles of the ancient Chinese monument were uncovered after a two-year government mapping study, according to an official report. The study used mapping technologies such as infrared rangefinders and GPS devices to show experts portions of the walls that are hidden by hills, trenches, and rivers. The newly mapped parts of the walls were built during the Ming Dynasty to protect against northern invaders. The newly found parts mean the Great Wall, which Chinese emperors began building 2,000 years ago to keep out Mongols and invaders, spans about 3,900 miles through the northern part of the country. China has in recent years begun restoring parts of the wall, as well as trying to rein in commercial development on and around it. I just thought it was interesting that they were actually able to find 180 extra miles of Great Wall of China. It's, It's interesting to me that that can even be lost. I mean, some parts of it are really worn down and some parts aren't, but it's still something that I'd like to go see. I found it interesting that they were able to find an extra 180 miles. There's a bit more to the article there if you guys wanted to go take a look at it and read through it. But anyway, we'll go ahead and move on. We got a lot more stuff to cover. And the next article that I wanted to look at is courtesy of news.bbc.co.uk. And it's "The Lightest Exoplanet is Discovered." It says that astronomers have announced the discovery of the lightest planet ever detected outside our solar system. Situated in the constellation Libra, it's only about twice as massive as Earth, whereas most other exoplanets identified have been far bigger. The scientists say the planet's orbit takes it far too close to its star Gliese 581 for life to be possible. It's too close. The detection was made by an international team of researchers using a 3.6 meter telescope at La Silla in Chile. The planet joins three other previously detected around its star and takes the designation Gliese 581e. And it says, because Gliese 581e takes just 3.15 days to orbit its host star, it lies beyond what scientists call the habitable or Goldilocks zone, where it is neither too hot nor too cold for liquid water to exist. But one of the other planets in the system does appear to be. Gliese 581d was first discovered in 2007. The latest research has allowed scientists to refine details of its orbit. The team now believes that planet D, which is about seven times the size of Earth, circles Gliese 581 in 66.8 days. The exoplanet discovery was announced at the JNAM conference during the European Week of Astronomy and Space Science, which is taking place at the University of Hertfordshire. And a scientific paper detailing the research has been submitted for publication in the Journal of Astronomy and Astrophysics. Now, there is seriously quite a bit more to this article for all of you science buffs out there that want to go take a look at this. I thought it was neat. I love astronomy and scientific stuff like that. It's fascinating to me that they can even find this stuff. But anyway, like I said, there's a bit more to the article there for you guys to go and read. Like I said, I'll post a link up to it for you guys to go and take a look at it. Now, the next article is yet one more Bigfoot spotted, and it's courtesy of allnewsweb.com. The only difference is that this one isn't in Russia. This one is in Sydney, in Australia. It says, two backpackers on a year-long trip around Australia got the fright of their life last week when they were out trekking in bushland in the vicinity of the township of Leura, L-E-U-R-A, not far from the well-known Katoomba landmark, the Three Sisters. It was early evening, and by the two ladies' admission, a bit late to be by themselves in the bush. Ingrid Schoen, 23, of Germany, and Adi Hassan, 22, of France, decided to head back into town when they heard something breaking the branches and loud footsteps heading towards them. Ingrid Schoen, a torch onto their track in front of them. At this point, they claim to have seen what they now describe as Bigfoot charge away into the distance. Admittedly, we did not get a close look, but we think what we saw looked like the American Bigfoot, basically covered in fur, about 2 meters tall. It definitely had no clothes on and was not human. Ingrid told All News Web reporter J.D. Cassidy, "We were petrified and almost lost our way back in our nervous state," Ingrid commented. The Blue Mountains is believed to be the home of a creature known as the Yowie, basically Australia's version of the Bigfoot or the Yeti. And there's been a lot of sightings recently. Prior to the arrival of Europeans, local Aboriginal tribes were certain of its existence. Aboriginal communities still living in the Blue Mountains, along with some other locals, continue to believe the Yowie might be out there in the vast expanses of Australia's Great Dividing Range. I just thought it was really interesting that even though there's this massive body of water in between two continents, such as Asia, where Russia is, and in Australia, that you could have basically the same creature. Now, does that just mean that, you know, this goes back to I think it was Pangaea or whatever, wherever all the continents were all one landmass way back in the day, and that they all broke apart into what they are now, that some of these animals were just on these different landmasses whenever they broke apart? Or does it mean that, you know, there just happens to be, there just happens to be Bigfoots in different places. Anyway, I just thought it was really interesting. There's not much to the article there. If anybody has any comments on Bigfoot or anything like that, let me know. I'd love to hear about it. The next article that I wanted to talk about is a fairly You know, it's a kind of a long article, so I won't go too much into it, but it's courtesy of uk.reuters.com, and it's archaeologists hunt for Cleopatra's tomb. On a hill overlooking the Mediterranean Sea in Alexandria, buried deep under the crumbling limestone of a temple to the goddess Isis, archaeologists believe the body of Queen Cleopatra may lie. The tomb of the Egyptian queen has never been found, but archaeologists are discovering more evidence that Cleopatra's priest carried her body to the temple after her suicide, where it could lie with her lover, Mark Antony. Archaeologists from Egypt and the Dominican Republic plan to start digging in search of Cleopatra's tomb as early as this year. Researchers have found by radar what may be three chambers as deep as 20 meters under the rock. Historians believe, based on the Roman writer Plutarch, hopefully that's right, that Antony and Cleopatra were buried together. Kathleen Martinez, a Dominican Republic scholar who pioneered the theory that Cleopatra could be buried in the temple, thinks one of the chambers might contain the remains of the famous couple. The body of Antony, Martinez says, may still be adorned in the former general's Roman uniform. Digging, however, may have to be postponed until the fall for security reasons, as the temple overlooks a Mediterranean summer home of Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak. Archaeologists this week discovered a cemetery near the temple containing gilded mummies, indicating the burial of royals around the temple. Anyway, I just thought it was really neat that they had found this, that they think they have found where Cleopatra has been buried. You know, it's interesting to me that somebody can go that long and not have been discovered yet, you know, but then again, there's a lot of things that are in this world that haven't been discovered, so it's just an interesting thing to me. There's a bit more to that article there for you guys to go and take a look at, because we don't, you know, I just didn't have a whole lot of time today to go through it all in depth. But anyway, let's move on to the next article, which is courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com. And this one, again, is just something that caught my eye. It says, for sale, Aleister Crowley's former Loch Ness property. And I guess, really, if you have Aleister Crowley and Loch Ness in the same sentence, it's going to catch my eye. It says, now this is a decently long article, so there's going to be more here to it than what I'm going to read, but it says, a plot of land once owned by the self-proclaimed most wicked man in the world has been put up for sale, attracting interest from rock stars, developers, and disciples of the dark arts. Boliscine Bay at Loch Ness at Foyers was part of the estate renowned at the start of the 20th century as the center of black magic, evil, and sorcery, under the ownership and influence of Satanist Aleister Crowley. The estate, once home of the millionaire rock star Jimmy Page, has been linked to a number of incidents over the years, including at least two violent deaths. As well as black magic rituals to invoke the four princes of evil, Crowley and his devil-worshipping followers used the estate to make talismans and offered animal sacrifices to Satan. The estate agent's brochure claims that the area is perfect for fishing, shooting, and hunting, an activity also favored by Crowley, who took his pack of bloodhounds on manhunts across the estate. Crowley and his disciples used drugs, sex, and blood sacrifices of goats and cats during debauched rituals. The black magician also took pleasure in the suffering that his sinister practices apparently brought to local villagers. He bragged about how an employee of the Boliscine estate got drunk one night after 20 years of abstinence and attempted to kill his wife and children. In 1960, the then owner of the house, Major Edward Grant, shot himself in the bedroom which had been used by Crowley for some time in his satanic rituals. Jimmy Page, in a 1975 interview, said, "The estate was owned by Aleister Crowley, but there were two or three owners before Crowley moved into it. On the site of the house, there was also a church that burned to the ground with a congregation inside." He said, "Strange things have happened in that house which have nothing to do with Crowley. The bad vibes were already there." Now, again, like I said, there's a bunch more to this article there. I just thought it was really, really interesting that Aleister Crowley had a Loch Ness property. I have no idea that he had any type of land or a house or anything on Loch Ness. Now, that's just, I don't know, it's just really interesting to me. I always thought that Aleister Crowley was an odd man. He really was. Interesting in a strange, psychotic, satanic kind of way, but, you know, I don't know. I just thought it was interesting that, you know, I mean, you have Loch Ness and Aleister Crowley in the same sentence. It's just going to catch my eye, but I wonder if Aleister Crowley had anything to do with the sightings of the Loch Ness Monster.
Many were infected. Infected with a disease that thinks, a disease that talks, and as the victims finally succumbed, a disease that walks. One man fought back. He resisted the voices. Perry Dawsey carved out pieces of himself in a desperate attempt to survive. He won. But as Perry awakes in a government hospital, he realizes he can still hear those voices. It's not over. And now it's even worse, because the infection has become contagious. Contagious is the bloody sequel to Scott Sigler's horror thriller, Infected. Contagious is available in stores December 30th, or reserve your copy now at scottsigler.com/pre-order. Get the book the day it comes out, because if someone spoils the ending, you'll hate yourself enough to use the chicken scissors.
All right, well, the next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com again. And it's Aussie researcher claims Yowie mauled a dog. It says that a territory Yowie researcher believes the Bigfoot-like beast could be responsible for the recent death of a dog south of Darwin. The dog's owner believed their 7-month-old puppy, which had the head ripped off its body, was mauled to death by dingoes. But Andrew McGinn, who has been researching Yowies in the Top End for more than a decade, said it was possible the hairy ape-type beast was responsible for the attack. The way the guy's dog was killed was typical of a Yowie, he said. I know it sounds fanciful, but over the past 100 years, dogs get killed or decapitated and people report feeling watched, having goats stolen, or seeing some tall hairy thing in the days beforehand. In the late 1990s, there were several reports of Yowie sightings around Acacia Hills. In August 1997, mango farmer Katrina Tucker reported being just meters away from what she described as a hairy humanoid creature on her Acacia Hills property. Photographs of the creature's footprints were taken the next day and examined by the Northern Territory Museum, which concluded that Mrs. Tucker had been hoaxed. But Mr. McGinn said after speaking with Mrs. Tucker, he had no doubt her story was true. Mr. McGinn contacted the Northern Territory News after reading a report that Acacia Hills resident Alan Ferguson had spotted UFOs flying around his home. He said this area seemed to be home to a lot of unusual activity. Anyway, I just thought it was really interesting. Of all these different Bigfoot sightings, Bigfoot reports, Yowie reports, Bigfoot, Yeti, whatever you want to call them, Sasquatch, Abominable Snowman, whatever you want to call them, I just thought it was really interesting that they're all over the place. And, you know, all these different things. I mean, how would you really know if a dog got killed by or mauled, you know, had its head cut off by a Bigfoot or a Yeti? I mean, I don't know what kind of evidence. It doesn't really say what kind of evidence that, you know, he would have there. There is quite a bit more to this article there. You know, it goes on to talk about the Bigfoot that was sighted in the Blue Mountains of Australia also, but it doesn't really give any good evidence as to, you know, what they found. They find any hair? I mean, there is a picture at the beginning of the article of a big brown footprint in the dirt that has huge toes. It could be a hoax. I mean, people have been, you know, making up hoaxed, you know, fake Bigfoot feet, you know, thanks to, you know, or whatever they make them out of to hoax people. So it wouldn't surprise me, but I just thought it was neat and I had to go and, you know, let you guys know about it. Guys, I hate to say, but this is the end of the show. We've come to close out yet one more episode of the 13 Skulls podcast. I really do appreciate all of you guys coming out and taking a listen to the show. Hopefully, I can keep the recording schedule up and you guys can have at least two shows a month, you know, one show every other week. But anyway, if you like, give the show a vote on Podcast Alley. I'd really appreciate it. Go to iTunes and write us a review. Sign the Frapper map. I'd love to know where you guys are listening from. But other than that, if you like the music that's in the show, it's courtesy of the IOTA promo net at iotaalliance.com. I will link to all of the music that's in the show tonight or today, this morning, whenever you're listening to the show. If you like them that much, you'll be able to download them. If you really like them, then you'll be able to go into the links that I'll provide and you'll be able to buy the music. And if you'd like to call the show, the phone numbers are 206-338-2205 or 817-986-0019. If you don't feel like talking and leaving a voicemail, then you can shoot me an email at the13skulls@gmail.com or info@the13skulls.com. I really do appreciate you guys coming and listening to the show. I really appreciate all the support everyone's been given. And as usual, whatever day, night, week, weekend that you're listening to the show, I hope you guys are doing good. Take care, and I will talk to you guys again on another day. Sense of death.